You're listening to Software Hard Talk with John C. Dvorak, the radio program for people interested in enriching their lives through personal computing. Funding for Software Hard Talk is provided by Symantec Corporation. From day one, you can get more out of Windows 95 by adding on Norton software from Symantec. The newest versions of Norton Utilities and Norton Antivirus bring true 32-bit system and antivirus protection to Windows 95. The all-new Norton Navigator makes working Windows 95 up to 5 times faster. Norton software from Symantec, right from day one. And by the Software Publishers Association. Preparing your kids for the future should include a solid grounding in the laws and ethics of software use. For information and educational material, call the Software Publishers Association at 800-388-7478.
One of the companies in the news a lot recently has been Borland International, a Scotts Valley-based company that provides software compilers, and they've had some financial difficulties, and their CEO left recently to start a new company. And over time, Borland's one of the more interesting companies in the business because they have kind of a cloudy beginning. Nobody really understands the origins of Borland, at least nobody as well as Niels Jensen, who is the actual founder of the company. He's now a board member at a company called TopSpeed in Pompano Beach, Florida, and he lives in London, England, and we have him on the phone to talk about Borland and TopSpeed. Niels, welcome to Software Hard Talk.
Hi, thank you.
Now, you were involved, you were one of the originators, if not the guy who founded Borland.
That is correct. I founded Borland in very early in 1981.
Now, could you give us a little of the history of Borland, because it's been clouded by propaganda largely over the last number of years, and its origins are kind of cloudy.
Well, they are in a way. The whole thing started in Denmark with myself and two of my Danish friends, and we wrote some programs and wanted to do at that time was to write a huge financial software package. And for that, we needed to write lots of documentation, which we did. But we found that WordStar wasn't quite up to it because it couldn't number chapters and sections and things like that. So we wrote a program to do all this for us. And eventually, Seymour Rubenstein's company, got wind of this program and wanted to buy it. But we ended up selling it to them for $60,000, I think it was, which was a huge sum of money in those days, especially when you didn't have too many of them yourself. So we set up an Irish company to handle this transaction for us. And that was called Borland Limited. The name actually just came out of the drawer at a lawyer's office where he had companies that had already been incorporated. So that's where we got the name Borland from.
Mm. Now, what happened after that, and where does Philippe Kahn come into the picture?
Well, that happened lots later. All this happened in 1981. And at that time, I believe Philippe was a math teacher in France. What happened later was that we went to a software show called CPM 82. I don't know if you remember that one. That was when Digital Research thought they owned the microcomputer world, and Bill and his MS-DOS was advertising and so on, but nobody took it really serious. What we did there was we met up with Philippe. Actually, I knew him prior to that. Philippe used to be VP of international sales for a company called OSM that made multi-processor computers.
Mm.
And I bought these computers from, or our company in Denmark bought these computers from Philippe. So I knew him on the telephone, so to speak, prior to meeting him. But at CPM 82, Philippe came over to us, and at that time he had quit his job with OSM, and he wanted to see what we were up to, etc. And he worked the booth for us at the show, And he thought that, well, it was great stuff that we had, and we decided then together to form Borland International in the U.S. And we just named it the same because it was going to sell the same products that we had at that time, which were Word Index, this product we sold to MicroPro. We also had a product called MenuMaster, which was a product to make it easy to make menus, etc., mm-hmm. under the operating system and just start applications by pressing a key.
Hmm. Then later came along, the hit products, which were Turbo Pascal and Sidekick.
That's correct.
Now, how did those evolve?
Well, that was some very, very strange coincidences. Sometimes it's strange how very big things can happen out of a pure coincidence. In this particular case, we were switching from OSM to another product line of microcomputers, and we were having a big launch at a hotel in Copenhagen. And at that launch, someone from a company called Polydata, by pure coincidence, sat down beside me at the lunch. And he said, well, we got this great Pascal. And I said, sure, sure. And he said, well, it's really good. I said, all right, let's take a look at it. And we got a copy of it. And that time it was called Compass Pascal. And Polydata sold that mainly in Scandinavia and Europe. So we tested out the product, and we found it to be pure dynamite. So almost immediately that week, I sat down with the MD of the company, and we wrote, got to an agreement in a restaurant in the traditional style, making notes on a napkin. And during that conversation, I said, well, could we have it for this new IBM thingy, the IBM PC? Because at that time it only ran under CPM on Z80 computers. And he said, well, I don't know, I have to ask Anders. And that's Anders Heilsberg, who wrote Turbo Pascal, and Delphi, of course. So he said, I'll give Anders a call. And I think he was down on the Costa del Sol or somewhere in Spain. And Anders said, yeah, sure, I can do it in 3 months, no problem. And that was that. Then I think we worked 48 hours without sleep, banging out a contract before they changed their minds. And we wrote a contract, which I happen to have right in front of me, as a matter of fact.
Hmm. Now, that then was marketed as an inexpensive Pascal in the early days.
That's right. We decided to undercut the other guys. There were several products on the market at that time. MT Plus, for example, which I think Digital Research had bought up and sold. There was another one called JRT Pascal. And that's actually how we got the idea for the low price.
From JRT Pascal, which I think was selling for $29.
Yes, that's right. That's right. We sold them at CPM 82. There were hundreds of people standing around their booths shouting, I want my JRT Pascal. And they couldn't deliver. They were just in total disorganized.
Yeah, they weren't the most... well, they finally folded shop. I think the guy ended up with a couple of Victorian houses in San Francisco, and that was about it.
Oh, boy.
At least that's the way I heard the ending of that operation.
Yeah.
Then you guys kind of took over the low end of the business.
That's right.
Now, did you... whose idea was it to just copy? Can you trace that back? I'm always wondering who is responsible for some of these concepts. Who was the one that came up with the $49.95 price for Turbo Pascal? Anybody in particular, or was it a group decision?
I think it was a group decision, but it was basically sparked by the fact that we saw people standing in droves around JRT's stand at that show. That made us believe that there was a market for low-cost software.
Hmm.
Also at that time, when we sold MenuMaster and the other product, Word Index, we sold people a low-cost evaluation copy, and we saw that people weren't afraid of spending $49.95 or whatever. That was just pocket money, and if the product didn't seem to work, well, they didn't care.
Mm. Now, I ran into another guy who used to be with the original Borland group called Alex Morton, who I believe now is up in Vancouver, Canada.
Yeah.
What was Alex's connection to the company?
Well, Alex was a VP of sales in the early days of Borland. And he was a chap who came up with the name Sidekick. None of us knew what it meant. Myself and my partner, Ole Henriksen, being Danes, didn't really understand the name Sidekick. And I don't recall whether Philippe did or not, but I do recall that we, none of us thought it to be a good name until Alex explained to us what it was.
And then, and so was Alex like the guy who pushed Sidekick through? How did Sidekick show up? Because that was, I guess, the other blockbuster that got the company going.
How it came about, the idea?
Yeah, how did it come about, and who developed it?
Oh, dear. There are loads and loads of opinions as to how the idea for the product came about. In my recollection, we were going to do a world-class word processor. And we wanted this word processor to have a calculator and address list and calendar and stuff like that built into it. And as we designed that thing, we began to realize that it would be a huge job, and it was certainly wasn't something we could finish in 3 or 4 months. So we decided to simply develop the tools and then sell those separately first.
Hmm. What tools did you develop in the process?
The tools that were intended to be used with the word processor is basically all that you see in Sidekick now, in the old version of Sidekick 1.5. There was a calendar, a dialer, a notepad, calculator, stuff like that you could call up on just with a keystroke, no matter what other application you were using, so that people sitting there with their brand new, at that time, $5,000 or $6,000 machine, when they were using their word processor, they suddenly couldn't. They needed to add two numbers together, and they couldn't, which was ridiculous, of course. So that's why Sidekick really came in and filled a huge vacuum in the market. I think we sold maybe 700,000 of them in 18 months or so. It was quite amazing.
Hmm.
And the development of that thing is another story yet, because I think it's one of the only projects I've ever been involved in where everything was done exactly by the book, and it was ready on time. What we did was we made a model in Pascal, which was a non-functional model, so it looked like the real thing, but it wasn't. But we could still sort of test out the functionality of it. And then everything was programmed in assembler afterwards, after we knew exactly what we were going to program. And we were 4 programmers on it. I was one of them. And it took us, I think, 3 months from the idea till we had the finished thing in our hands.
So how did, over time, Philippe ended up being kind of the head of the whole company, or at least it appeared to be, to the American press?
Well, you know, John, you can't. It's not enough to have the best software in the world. You need to have the best marketing as well. And Philippe, as we all know, turned out to be an excellent marketeer. I mean, he is so good at that, especially at that time. That he started out having 100,000 shares in Borland, I think it was. Well, we've divided them later on and split them and all that stuff. But in the beginning I had, I think, 250,000 and he had 100,000. So as time progressed, we just gave him more and more shares because he was doing a great job.
When did that continue, or did he lose sight of the ball, or what happened? Because Borland at some point kind of lost track of itself. And I guess Philippe is now off and doing his own thing all over again from scratch. Looks like he's trying to redo. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you do.
Well, it looks like he's trying to, you know, go back to his youth, because he's brought Sidekick out again, and he's got a couple of other small products.
Yeah, he seems to have fun with this Starfish software and Slimware, whatever he calls it.
Yeah.
But when it started going wrong with Borland, that's difficult to say. I think my personal opinion is that it started going wrong very much earlier than people believe. It started going wrong when we did not follow up on our plans for making all the software work together instead of just go out and buy this, that, and the other.
You mean, I noticed the company went on kind of a buying binge, and
yeah.
They'd buy something. It worked at first. I thought they bought a couple of some peculiar database spreadsheet product from a company in California, which was overpriced, and I can't remember the name of it. then they sold it inexpensively. But then once, I think, they bought Paradox, and then changed the pricing scheme from, you know, low price, aggressive software to now we're playing Microsoft's game or Ashton Tate's game, things started to change then, which was quite a while ago. Is that possible, that when that happened?
That is certainly some of it, but it started earlier than that. It really started when we started buying things like Reflex, for example.
Yeah, actually, Reflex is the one I was thinking of.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Those and Sprint, which was a word processor. What we should have done with 2020 hindsight, of course, is that we should have made sure that everything that we did fit together, and that was actually the development team that worked here in England. That was what we thought should happen, but Philippe let other things happen, and at some point in time he went out and bought a C compiler when we had our own perfectly good C compiler that was almost finished. That was when I left Borland, as a matter of fact, which was in, I think it was in 1987 or something like that.
So the company, the founders kind of bailed around that long ago.
Yeah. Well, I bailed out in 87. I'm pretty sure that was the year. I went over there with a beta version of our C compiler that was very fast and made code much better than Microsoft or any of the other C compilers around. And I was informed that Philippe had now bought, I think it was called Wizard C. So my choice was to go back to England and tell all the developers, well, guys, what you've been working on for the past few years, forget it, because we just bought something instead. And I wasn't really ready to treat my team like that, so I said goodbye and thanks for all the fish.
Did whatever happened to the compiler that they were developing?
They're still living on in TopSpeed Corporation.
Okay, so they all went over to TopSpeed?
Yes, eventually. What happened first was that I formed a company called JPI, and we did a series of compilers, Modular 2, which is a kind of successor to Pascal, and a C compiler and a C++ compiler. And we made lots and lots of innovations at that time, but they were all completely ignored by the press, unfortunately. Even though we spent hundreds and hundreds of thousands on advertising every quarter, but the press kind of ignored the innovation that we had put into the products because Microsoft hadn't caught up yet. So eventually, I saw the futility of actually competing against Microsoft and Borland, because they threw millions after their products. And instead, I merged, or we merged JPI with a company at that time called Clarion. They did databases and red tools, but their stuff did not have a compiler built in. So because all our compilers were designed in such a way that they had a common backend, which means that the C compiler, the Modular 2 and the C++ only had were front ends to a common code generator. Because we'd done that, it was, well, not simple, but it was certainly possible to take the fourth generation language that Clarion had and then make that use our code generator. And that's the way the first RAD tool was born.
Now, back to Borland for just 1 second. There's one other product that just came to mind as you were discussing this connection, or the fact that you wanted everything at Borland to like work with each other. What? Where did Turbo Lightning ever come from, which was that unusual idea which was popular for about 2 years, I think, in the industry, about which was called a software bus, where you'd have like some sort of a underlying software system that you would slip, you know, virtual software cards into to create all these different kinds of products. Wasn't Turbo Lightning kind of a, didn't it have that in mind, or what do you remember the story behind that product?
Not in detail, but I guess the bottom line is it failed.
Yeah, it did. I've never really gotten that Turbo Lightning story straight. They had all kinds of coverage, too, by the magazines, and for some reason the public didn't go for it.
Yeah.
I believe a lot of the, you know, the success and failure has to do with a certain kind of magic that, you know, when the public just gets something in its craw, you know, they flock to it. And
That's absolutely right, yes.
And it's hit and miss whether you can create that or not. So, well, what's in the future here for you? You're a board member, I know, at Top Speed.
That's right.
You're also a chairman of Vertec.
Yeah.
And do you have any other plans? You going to do another Borland?
Well, I don't think so.
Your team is pretty much still together, though, over at the Top Speed Corporation?
Oh, yes, yes.
Do you do any more coding yourself?
As a matter of fact, I do. I do coding in virtual reality with the other company I have called Vertec. But maybe we should talk some more about Clarion before we go on to that.
Sure. Clarion makes a, for people out there, they make a development software that has a huge following. And apparently people I've talked to who use it just think it's the best thing since sliced bread. But it doesn't have a high profile.
That's absolutely true. They're almost religious about how good they think it is. If any one of you out there want to try it, all you have to do is to, well, first you might want to go on CompuServe and do a Go Top Speed. And then just ask the guys at the forum there why you should buy it. And you'll see an enthusiastic, very big following with loads and loads of traffic on that forum. Can I give the number here?
Sure, go ahead. Yeah.
You can also call 1-800-226-0734, and then Top Speed will send you a free CD. That's a trial pack of the Clarion Red language and the Red system, and you can try that out and see if you like it. And it's absolutely free. Just call 1-800-226-0734. And if you're using Delphi, try this as well. I'm sure you'll be surprised.
So this is a Delphi competitor?
Well, yes and no. Delphi is more of a VB buster, and is not exactly for the same market as ours. We see Clarion as being a business development tool, a tool for business applications. And Clarion is also more RAD than Delphi is, in the sense that you don't need to write that much code yourself when you use Clarion. As a matter of fact, in many cases, you can do a complete application without writing a single line of code. So there are many differences between Clarion and Delphi. The best thing to do is actually to try them both out and see what fits your own application the best.
Would Clarion be a good substitute for or a replacement for DBase? Is that more along the lines of its type of application?
It would certainly be a good substitution. It's in a totally different league than DBase. You can't compare the two.
We're talking to Niels Jensen, who's a board member of Top Speed Corporation in Pompano Beach, also the chairman of Vertec International. And he is the founder of Borland, the software developer, software company down in Scotts Valley, California. No longer associated with them, but responsible for some history. Niels, thanks for being with us today.
Certainly. My pleasure.
Tapes for Software Hard Talk can be obtained by sending a check for $15 to Software Hard Talk, P.O. Box 29073, San Francisco, California, 94129-9073. Selected transcripts of Software Hard Talk interviews are available in our America Online area. Use keywords Dvorak or Software Hard Talk.
Well, I see by the digital clock on the wall that our time is up for this week. On next week's show, Quarterdeck, Gaston Pastien is with us to talk about company strategy. This is a very famous company. What are they up to? We'll find out on next week's Software Hard Talk. Until then, I'm John C. Dvorak, and remember, everything you've learned this week will be null and void by this time next week. So long.
You've been listening to Software Hard Talk with John C. Dvorak. Funding for Software Hard Talk has been provided by My Software Company, makers of inexpensive and easy-to-use software for the home and small business. For information or a catalog, please call 800-325-3508. And by the Software Publishers Association. Think that all software piracy occurs in other countries? American software companies lost over $1 billion last year because American consumers and businesses made illegal copies of their software. Those losses cause jobs and curtail innovation. Don't copy that floppy. Learn the facts on software copyrights by visiting the Software Publishers Association website at www.spa.org. Software Hard Talk with John C. Dvorak is produced at the studios of KALW-FM Information Radio in San Francisco. Our executive producer is Maureen McGinley. Co-producer is Jim Dalrymple. Assistant producer and engineer is Michael Dupin. Please remember to join us next week for another enlightening journey into the high-tech world of personal computing.
Hi, I'm John C. Dvorak, host of Software Hard Talk. On our next show, we've got Gaston Pastien, former executive at Philips and Apple, who's taken over the reins at Quarterdeck Corporation, one of the leading high-tech companies, especially known for their windowing software that was so popular in the 80s. Now they're competing with Microsoft more directly. Gaston Pastien's on the next Software Hard Talk.